No, you don't. It's free tonight. Free every night. But I want to make you feel special that you've tuned in just now to 720 WGN. Patty off tonight. I'm Mark Harmon. Esmeralda Leon is in traffic. Good evening, Esmeralda.
Good evening.
Good evening, Craig Collins, running the show.
Hey, buddy.
Good to be here tonight. It's a little bit of a, I feel like almost a prime time spot to be sitting in for Patty tonight. One day after 80 million people watched debate number one. 80 million. So I want to have a discussion with you to start the show tonight about how we got here, because I know we all have our opinions and we all have our biases. I want to talk about bias, too, on the show tonight, because that is of interest to me. Because we all are, and a lot of times when we're talking politics on the radio on 720 WGN, people will text in, "You're biased." Yes, I'm biased. So are you. So is your mom, dad, siblings, friends. Everybody has their biases. But we'll get to that in a little while. And we are going to have an expert on tonight. Craig has acquired us a superstar faculty, Dean of College of Arts and Sciences, Professor of Political Science, a man that I'll probably be intimidated to talk to because he's done so much. It's like Dr. Stephen Maynard Caliendo will be with us at the bottom of the hour here as he will give his thoughts on the election and where we're at and where we're going as we lead up to November. But let's take a look at this, right? What do we value the most as far as our lives are concerned? Where do we spend our money? Because at the end of the day, you can have all the thoughts that you want or say a million things, but like when you actually reach into your wallet, that speaks more than anything else, right? And what do we do? I mean, my look at it is that we love to be entertained. We spend huge dough on cable television, on sporting events, on plays, on going out, drinking, whatever. I mean, we just love to be entertained, right? I think that's overwhelmingly fair. And then we also, I mean, even outside of spending money, I mean, what do we do when we're at work all day long? We're on Facebook, we're on Instagram, we're on Snapchat, and we don't have to be at work, by the way, for that. We could be sitting at home. I mean, the first thing I tend to do in the morning is I wake up right onto Facebook. Let's see what's going on in the world. Let me connect with somebody in a fake way. I'm on Facebook. It's 7:24. It's 5:18. Because I'm laying in my bed. I want some stimulation. And so where I'm going with this is, I think most of us are kind of just flabbergasted, there's a word, as to how these are the two candidates in Hillary and Donald, especially Donald. Like, how did the, I mean, Hillary is a lifelong politician. We all expected that she would be there. But Donald, most people when this started thought it was kind of a joke. But yet here he is.
I agree with you in the sense that that's why 80 million people watched this debate. But Donald Trump winning primaries is more confusing to me because people actually had to go and vote for a human being.
Right.
And is that, do we want entertainment to that level? That we go and we vote someone into a nomination to be entertained?
Well, I think on some level we did. And also, there's also biases that are kicking in too, especially now. But I think that we, you know, when you looked at the candidates on the Republican side from Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, John Kasich, whoever you want to, they were all politicians, had experience, were in the game. And I guess, you know, part of us want, you want the outsider, but there was some way in which Donald was just that much more entertaining that he connected with everybody and you wanted to see more of him.
If we take your thought even further, Mark, do you see Donald Trump winning the presidency because people think that's entertainment?
Well, I personally am having a hard time believing the polls. Like, I just can't believe this is real. He's really going to win? Is that what's happening here? That can't be true. But maybe we will, because now we're into the whole bias stage of the people just don't like Hillary, and they have a million different reasons, which I'll get into. But I really think that we created this because we're, in a lot of ways, we're just bored. Like, we wanted, people were so excited slash angry slash disappointed, whatever, a million different words you can pick here, is, but they were, everybody was going to watch last night. Oh my God, she's wearing red. He's wearing a blue tie. This is unbelievable. I had a tennis match last night. People were bailing out. DVR is there for you. You could go home and watch it. Nobody wanted to be doing anything else last night other than watching the debate. And most people know who they're voting for, right? That was one of my most amazing moments last night. I'm watching CNN afterwards, and there they were, the 20 undecided. And it's just, they're in this room. I'm like, there they are. Those are the people that don't know who they're voting for.
I don't even know if that's, those people are being honest.
Yeah, me neither.
They just want to be on television.
Me neither.
I don't know. I'm unsure.
Hey, are you undecided? If you're undecided, I'll put you, you'll be on TV. Okay, I'm undecided.
Yep.
That's possible. But, I mean, I'd love to hear how you think we got here. 312-981-7200. I really think that we actually, in some unconscious way, just created the most entertaining election that we can possibly have. Like, we'll never forget this, no matter what happens. And hopefully, no matter who wins, it's not going to be a complete disaster. I mean, I think that is the biggest concern out there, even for those who are voting for the Don. I think secretly underneath it, oh my God, I'm going to vote for him, but I really hope that he doesn't completely screw up the country. Like, that thought's definitely going on. I'm still voting for him. I hate her, and I'm not going to say it, but deep down in me, there is a chance that he just completely ruins the whole thing and obliterates all of us. I mean, that has to be a thought.
Do you have a lot of friends that say that the president doesn't really matter? Like, whoever it is, that their powers are restricted in a way that they don't, it doesn't even really matter.
Some
of my friends that don't really care who wins say that they're not worried because the president can't do that much.
Yeah, there are, I've heard that numerous mm-hmm. times. I don't.
That's scary. That's a scary idea.
I don't get that. This is the most powerful person in the world. I mean, that's what we're talking about here. But I just look at it like, I mean, people, we won't say it, but people were like legit excited about last night. Like, you're going to go on Facebook, this is horrible, I can't believe we're here. But yet you are not turning off that television. You're just not. And you're Google searching all day long. At least a lot of you are. I am. What do the polls say? Well, this poll has Donald in front. This one has Hillary. Like, we have created something for us to do. It's like we're so bored with what's going on. We're so we like overstimulate ourselves to the point where, okay, now I'm doing, not by my, I mean, we don't talk to anyone, right? Like, I can look at you right now, but then I'm gonna put my head down and I'm gonna get on my phone and that's it. Like, we have no connection with anyone. Even I'm looking at the people out the window here at the Allstate Showcase Studio, right? You're gonna hang there for a minute, but then you're gonna go right back to your phone and do your thing. No, you're not gonna do that. You're gonna sit there right there and stare at me all night. That's cool. Well, I'm here till 2. Well, hang on a second. Are you really going to stare at me all night?
Absolutely.
Maybe.
Are you guys from out of town?
Yes.
Where are you coming from?
California.
Idaho.
California and Idaho? Did you guys just meet here?
No.
Interesting. All right. Well, hey, I'm going to be here till 2. We can continue. I'll check in every break.
Okay.
Is that cool? Yeah, all right. What are your names?
Jody.
Jeremiah.
Jody and Jeremiah. J squared. All right. We'll keep it at that. J squared are outside the studio. So, okay.
That was a little interesting that he said yes and she said no. I'm pretty sure they're not
staying.
Well,
we got California and Idaho. Like, I don't know what's going on outside here. Like, there's a lot going on. They're both very attractive people, and I have high expectations for both of them. Let's just say that. But my point is that you know I'm right about – if you ride on the CTA, there's, 100 people in your car. No one's talking to anybody. We're all on our phones. What's entertaining? What's the most entertaining thing I can possibly do? Well, the most entertaining thing we could do with the election wasn't saying, you know what, John Kasich, you're the most balanced guy going here by far, but yet, you're kind of a soft talker and you're just not that interesting, and I know that you're probably fair and balanced, but you're boring. So I'm voting for Donald because he's going to really make change and he's going to really take the country to places that we've never been before. And by the way, I'm not owning this part of it, but he entertains me. It's just entertaining. And Hillary... Yeah, from a Democratic standpoint, it would have been more entertaining with Bernie. But this is entertaining from the standpoint that She's so hated and so despised that people can just like point at her and say, you're the bad one. Look at her wearing the pantsuit outfit again.
I agree with you so much about watching the debate or even sharing something on my social media page if I just enjoy this kind of stuff. But actually going and voting, that part confuses me, that I want something to be entertaining so much that I go vote to make it happen.
Well, I don't know why. I think that's where the bias gets in here, because some people will never vote one side and others would never vote the other. And so even now that this is the option, I think people who have always voted Republican, they can't bring themselves to vote for her. So the Don's right there. I mean, I think that's clear as day what's going on. So bottom of the hour, Dr. Stephen Maynard Caliendo, Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences, Professor of Political Science, North Central College. We'll get his take on the election. He's excellent. He's been on a gazillion networks. Going to be with you at 11:30. That's right. The United States of America, baby. We have created this. No one in the history of the world has created a better election than Hillary and the Don. And by the way, if you were wondering, and I know that you are, J Squared is still out there. What's up, J Squared?
I was just wondering.
Yeah.
If you don't like her pantsuits.
Yeah. I know. I got no problem with her pantsuits, but a lot of people don't. But go ahead.
Well, what would they prefer that she wears?
Yeah, exactly, right? Like, what do you want her to wear? You want her to be all exposed up there, wearing a dress, showing cleavage? I mean, what do you want her to do? She's got to wear what she wears. That's her look. That's her game. What do you think?
I have no opinion about it, but your statement led me to believe
that I had a judgment
about it.
Yeah.
Oh no, we don't care about what you wear. I like that he's just going to ask questions without intended answers, though.
All right, hang on there, J Squared. They're outside the studio.
Oh, that was a real question.
Yeah, no, that's legit. Mm-hmm. All right. So J Squared is Jody and Joshua, something like that. If you're just joining the show, they're hanging out and looking at me. I said I'm going to be here till 2:00. They say they're going to stay till 2:00. They made it through one commercial break. That's impressive in itself. Now we have news coming up. So this is, we have to take another break too? Oh. Well, we'll get another break and then news. And this is going to be a challenge if you're going to make it through all that. But I love you, J Squared, whatever you do. A couple texts coming in here. 309, I've been saying this for a while. You've hit it exactly on the head. Thank you, 309. And what we're talking about is, I just think we've created this election. We have done it. We have wanted to be entertained so bad we didn't even know it. You know what we're going to do? We're going to create Donald and Hillary. We're going to entertain ourselves all the way to November. We're going to watch this over the NFL. I mean, last night, the Saints at the Falcons, Monday Night Football, huge ratings. Not the 80 million watching the election. I mean, the NFL got put on the back burner.
84 million.
Oh, my bad, Rob. Thank you. 84 million. 720 WGN. Hope you're having a great Tuesday. It is Tuesday, right? Yes, it is. 11:38, 22 minutes left in a Tuesday. Although Patty doesn't maintain that Wednesday starts until she wakes up the next day, and I support that. Right, Esmeralda?
Nope, it's Wednesday.
Right, Rob Martyr?
Still Tuesday, man.
Okay, thank you. Hey, Stephen Maynard Caliendo is the Dean of the College of Arts and Sciences and a professor of political science at North Central College. And I'm going to say that he is an election expert, and he joins us now on 720 WGN. Stephen, thanks for taking time. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Mark. Thanks for having me.
It is most definitely our pleasure. So, all right, we'll just start at the top here. Your thoughts last night. Who do you think did better in debate number one?
Hillary Clinton did better in the debate. I don't know that that means much going forward. It certainly doesn't mean much to Donald Trump's supporters, I don't think. I mean, we can think back historically, and candidates who ended up winning elections performed poorly in a debate, and particularly in a first debate. We don't even have to go back that far. In 2012, President Obama did not perform well in the very first debate. But I don't think there's any way to look at what we saw last night and with any kind of objectivity whatsoever and leave with the feeling that Donald Trump prevailed in that contest. He certainly was outmatched and did not look particularly presidential. If we're scoring it that way, it was certainly a good night for Hillary Clinton.
I mean, does that matter anymore in your mind, the whole looking presidential thing? Because I'm trying.
I don't know what matters. Yeah,
right. That's what, right. I'm like, what actually matters? Because I spent the first half hour, Stephen, just talking about. I just think we want to be entertained, and that's why we've created this ridiculous election.
I volunteered. I was on CBS 2 this morning. I do political analysis for CBS 2 in Chicago, and I volunteered to relinquish my PhD and give it back to Purdue University because I have no idea what I'm talking about in any of this election. Everything's upside down. It's very difficult. I mean, I've always stayed away from predictions. That's sort of not the point. But usually I'm in a pretty good position to explain what's happening, and I've just not been able to explain what's been happening very well throughout this entire campaign, from particularly in the Republican primaries. But even as this race tightens, I mean, I was in Cleveland for the RNC, and I went to Philadelphia for the Democratic convention as well. And so I've been, you know, paying very close attention throughout. And I think you're right. A lot of this defies what political scientists have understood for some time, or at least is challenging what we think we understood. And I think historians have been equally baffled by a lot of this.
So, okay, I was just talking with Craig, who you were speaking with on the phone. And
right.
I mean, his thought process that he hears from a lot of his friends is that, and Craig, by the way, you can say this if I say it wrong here.
No, it's fine.
Is that, you know, well, does it really matter who the president is? They don't have that much power. So whoever wins, it's really not going to have any real effect.
And Stephen, this is actually friends of mine who plan to vote. And I'm not saying which way. I think they're planning to vote both ways. They don't think that it matters.
What do you think, Stephen?
Well, it matters who the president is, generally speaking, but I think what your friends are on to something in that the framers very carefully put forward a framework for a government where one person could not be too powerful. I think that they, if we're honest, they couldn't foresee the rise of the way the presidency has expanded in terms of foreign policy. I mean, I think there's a lot of power that presidents have, War Powers Act notwithstanding, to be able to engage our troops and harm and make decisions with respect to foreign policy. A handful of things can be done domestically with executive orders, but as president, you know, you don't have to go too far to ask President Obama how he thinks it is, you know, being the emperor of America. It's very difficult to get things done if you have a Congress that isn't supportive. And one of the things that's going to be interesting if Donald Trump would win the election is how Republicans in Congress would react to him, because so many of them have come out against not just him personally, but many of the ideas that he's putting forward. And so it is true that this is not that we're not electing even a prime minister. Forget about an emperor, even a prime minister, which, you know, in a parliamentary system would have the would be able to enjoy majority support in the legislative body. And with the way we do elections, that just doesn't work that way. So I think your friends are onto something in some ways, but in other ways, there are some important substantive things, not to mention the symbolic importance of being president of the United States.
If you were advising Donald, Stephen, what would you tell him to do in debate number two, and I guess on the road up leading up to it? How does he continue to, I guess, you know, keep himself right there and perhaps I guess inch ahead in the race? What would you say?
It's funny, you know. I think if I could just turn your question a little bit, if I were advising him prior to coming into this debate, I probably would have done something different. And Roger Ailes was helping him prepare for the debate. And I don't know any of the behind-the-scenes stuff, and hopefully we'll find out at some point. But I really was surprised that he wasn't trying to act calmer, more traditionally presidential, because I think that that's what a lot of people who really don't like Hillary Clinton or would maybe like some of what Donald Trump's saying but just aren't sure about his temperament need to be convinced about that. So what I expected him to try that. I don't know that it would have worked for 90 minutes because we've never seen him be that under control for that long of a period of time. I'm wondering if in debate prep they didn't try it and it came off as awkward. And at some point they just said, you know what, Donald, just be yourself, man. Just go out there.
Right.
You're not going to have a crowd that's hooting and hollering, but just do what you do. You know, just be you. It got you this far. You know, we're not going to try to – people like you because you're not a typical politician, so we're not going to try to fit you into that mold. The problem is that it was a tremendous failure in terms of how people have analyzed how the debate went. But we're not going to know for another week or so how people responded. I mean, that CNN poll that came out last night that showed a 35-point favorite, that was immediately afterwards. There probably were too many Democrats in that sample. I think that's part of the problem there. But also, it's like that. There's no persistence to that. In other words, afterwards. We don't know what's going to happen later down the road. That was a snapshot right afterwards. Two more presidential debates coming, and it's still 5 weeks away until Election Day. So in some ways, I don't know that he can be anything other than he is, and I don't know that he should be.
I read something today in the New York Times about why people hate Hillary, and you know, I guess that's multifold, which,
yeah,
you know, for those who dislike her. One thing that I never really considered is that here, reading it says, at least in her public persona, Clinton gives off an exclusively professional vibe, industrious, calculated, goal-oriented, distrustful. It's hard from the outside to have a sense of her as a person. She is a role. So they're looking at her like she's this workaholic that has no personality whatsoever, and they don't like that. They like, that's not how people want to be themselves. Does that make any sense to you?
It makes a little bit of sense. It makes sense, but I have to say that what's missing from that part of the analysis is the gender component, because people don't like men who do that either. But women are in a really interesting and difficult position with respect to public life, because we expect them to do all the things that are traditionally male and have those characteristics, but we penalize them if they aren't feminine enough. And so what you just read there, I mean, if you think about that through a gender lens, you see, part of what that's saying is she's not womanly enough. She's not motherly enough. She doesn't do that. And so if you remember in 2008 where she had that sort of moment in New Hampshire where she got a little bit teary, you know, it was widely reported she cried. She didn't cry, but she sort of welled up when the woman asked her, how do you keep doing this? And her poll numbers went up in New Hampshire. She ended up winning New Hampshire, and largely people attributed to the fact that she looked more human. What a horrible, right? I mean, she spent her life trying to compete in what has historically been a man's world, and to try to do it on the terms that are going to be successful to her. And so to the extent that she's been able to do that, we say that that's beneficial. And then on the other hand, we sort of say, well, look, she's not soft enough. She's not maternal enough. So it's very difficult. It's what sometimes gender scholars refer to as the double bind.
Stephen Maynard Caliendo with us here, a political science expert, North Central College, the dean of the College of Arts and Sciences. You know, see, that's an interesting quandary that she's in right there, because listen, I think historically I would look at someone who's crying as like, that's weak. But
right.
The reality is that that's actually a strength move by her. She's in her emotions and she's, you know, showing vulnerability, which is impressive. Which, by the way, I don't think we're ever going to see that from the Don. But if she does that, they're going to pick at her. Look at her. She's crying.
Yeah,
right.
I mean, exactly.
So that's,
can't be too much. You know, the little bit of welling, then that's human. But if it was a tear that ran down the cheek, that would have been the end of the game, right?
Right.
She cried, and you can't have somebody crying in the White House. So, yeah, it's a very difficult situation. And again, it's not that men don't have some of these constraints, but the constraints are tremendously exacerbated for women.
Yeah, and you know, I think a moment's, you know, listening to current President Barack Obama, and you can feel the pain in his voice when he's talking about different shootings, and you can hear a little bit of a voice crack. And I get it, you're the president, you have to be presidential, but that in those moments you do feel like there it is, he's a human. I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's moving around. And some people were watching, they were talking about how when she was you know, the way she was standing there last night wasn't good. I mean, what did you think about the body language that both of them had when they weren't speaking?
No, it was I thought she did well, particularly compared to him. I'll tell you, I watched with about 100 people at North Central College. We had a watch party and a panel of expert communication scholars who were kind of breaking things down. And we watched the C-SPAN feed. And I know that some of the networks decided to do different feeds with respect to split screen and full screen coverage. The C-SPAN feed only had split screen for the whole 90 minutes. So I never even saw Lester Holt. They just had it the camera on both of them the entire time, which was a really interesting way to watch it. So every reaction shot was visible to folks who are watching from that perspective. And I thought I think she did well. I mean, she looked at him when he was saying horrible things to her rather than averting her eyes. I mean, she looked down to right, and then she looked back at him, whereas he was sort of like looking off into the distance sometimes and looked either disinterested or just agitated with her. You know, this constant sort of scowling that he did and leaning into his microphone to interrupt and correct her, to interrupt Lester Holt. That's the kind of body language. There have been some communication scholars who said, if you want to know who won a debate, turn the sound down. just watch the way they're reacting, watch their body language, and see who's defensive, who feels confident. And I think she projected very well through most of the evening, even though she was constantly interrupted. And the analysis suggested she didn't speak as much as him. I think he spoke about 60% of the time or something close to that. So, I thought she did pretty well on that part.
I did love how he leaned into the microphone like it was family feud.
Right.
It was like a legit family feud. Cats. Yes, that is the number. That is the
Survey
number one.
Survey says.
Hey, right. Steven, can you hang on for one more segment? I got a 3-minute timeout here. If you're okay with that, okay,
we'll do. Yeah.
Okay, appreciate it. Quick timeout. 720 WGN. 720 WGN. I'm Mark Carmen, sitting for Patty tonight. Patty will be back tomorrow. Steven Maynard Caliendo, dominating at North Central College. Steven, you don't mind if I just say it like that, do you? Professor of political science.
I don't even know what it means, so no, I don't mind at all.
Yeah, I don't exactly know what that means either, but I have a vision of you doing something really well. Hey, I thought I had more time, so I got like 4 minutes here.
Okay.
So, when you look at the map right now, I don't know if this is an expertise level for you. What's your take? Who's winning the election?
Well, I mean, Hillary Clinton's still in the driver's seat, I would say. I mean, one of the things you got to remember, the way we elect presidents with the Electoral College, and the way we've had movement in the last couple of censuses, after the last few censuses, the Republicans start off in a tremendous disadvantage. I mean, if you think about states that are reliably red versus states that are reliably blue, and how the population has shifted over the last 20 years. It really, to get to that magical 270, which is the majority of electoral votes, so that's what's needed to become president. And the Democrats start off with 238 or 242 or something like that. I mean, they don't need that many of the swing states. The Republicans really have to almost run the table on the swing states because so much of their support is in states that has lower populations. And so that's something to keep in mind. The other thing is that a lot of these states are now within the margin of error in some of the most reliable polls, and so it's going to be very difficult to predict. It's going to come down to voter turnout. But there are states that are quote-unquote in play this year that we really haven't seen in play for some time, and I think that's because you don't have a traditional Republican candidate. It's not just that he's non-traditional in the sense that he hasn't been a politician, but also some of the views that he has are not consistent with Republican views on social issues for sure. But also, if you think about some of the things he's proposed, these are really big government incentives. I mean, some of the things he wants to do are going to cost a lot of money, and a lot of fiscal conservatives are worried about that.
Steven, great stuff. Appreciate the time, and look forward to talking to you again here down the road as we get towards November. Thanks for making some time late tonight. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it was fun. Thanks. I really appreciate you having me on.
Our pleasure, for sure. Steven Maynard Caliendo, Dean of College of Arts and Sciences, Professor of Political Science, North Central College. We're going to hear from both Donald and Hillary coming up after midnight, 720 WGN. Give it to me, I'm worth it. Baby, I'm worth it. I'm worth it. This one's for you, Esmeralda.
Oh, thank you.
You're worth it, girl.
Oh, I know.
Oh, I know you know. I'm worth it. You're worth it too, Martiri, as you leave. Yeah, buddy. Give me that point. You're worth it too, Craig Collins. And you're worth it out there. You. In your bed, in your car. Like, normally right now, I'd be chilling in my bed, listening to Patty, falling asleep in about 10 minutes, having a little rolling over.
With your duck?
With my duck, that's right. Arnold the Duck. It's my guy. Thank you for bringing that up, Esmeralda.
Oh, for sure.
So I figured we could have a little bit of like random Hillary and Donald just play different moments from the debate, and we could just react to them in real time. Esmeralda, you up for this?
Sure.
It's not really real time because I believe the debate happened last night, so that wouldn't be real time. Thank you. It's getting late. But since we all weren't together, and since we can't get enough of Hillary and Donald, and since 84 million people watched it and we can't wait until the next debate, let's just have a little moment in time. So Craig Collins has 23 cuts from the debate. And he's just going to pick one, he's going to play it, and we're going to react. Ready, set, go.
We have no leadership. And honestly, that starts with Secretary Clinton All right, you have 2 minutes on the same question to defend tax increases on the wealthiest Americans, Secretary Clinton.
I have a feeling that by the end of this evening, I'm going to be blamed for everything that's ever happened.
Why not?
Why not? Yeah, why not?
That's a great one, right? We have no leadership, and that starts with Hillary Clinton. It's Hillary's fault, man. The whole country's falling apart.
Well, she's also, I think, to blame for the Lincoln assassination, and many other things, apparently, according to Trump.
I mean, the thing I like about that one, though, is that, like, they're just sort of in some weird relation. Why not? I mean, it's like they're sitting on a couch, and they've been, you know, one member of the family, the other member of the family, and they've been going at each other for years. Like, that's what that felt like to me. Why not? Might as well blame you for everything. You didn't mow the lawn. You were the reason why Michael has ended up an alcoholic. I mean, that's what it sounded like. It was ridiculous. It's your fault that dinner wasn't ready. You jerk. I'm softening up that word. I mean, how about just the way they were shaking hands last night? Oh, and Hillary, can I call you Hillary? You're my friend. All right, let's go. Give me another one, Craig.
Thank you, Lester. our jobs are fleeing the country. They're going to Mexico. They're going to many other countries. You look at what China is doing to our country in terms of making our product. They're devaluing their currency, and there's nobody in our government to fight them. And we have a very good fight, and we have a winning fight, because they're using our country as a piggy bank to rebuild China, and many other countries are doing the same thing.
See, I thought for a minute there he was rolling. Like, he was balanced, he had it going. He was...
Didn't answer the question, though.
Didn't answer. But then when he got into the fight, we have a very good fight. We are a good fight. We love to fight. Then I kind of lost him. What do you mean we've got a good fight? Like, what exactly do you mean? We have a good argument? We have a good standing? I don't think we really have a great standing with China. You know how much money we owe China? I mean, they still need us. I get that part. But I like that we have a fight. We're a good fight. We love to fight. We are going to fight. I'll fight you. Anybody want to fight me, I'll fight you. Let's fight. Look at me. All right, next one, please.
And we need to have smart, fair trade deals. Mm-hmm. We also, though, need to have a tax system that rewards work and not just financial transactions. And the kind of plan that Donald has put forth would be trickle-down economics all over again. In fact, it would be the most extreme version, the biggest tax cuts for the top percent of the people in this country that we've ever had. I call it trumped-up trickle-down, because that's exactly what it would be.
So she's fishing the whole time there, and she's trying to hit this home run with her trumped-up trickle-down, and you're just out over your skis. It's just not that. Like, it didn't land at all. I didn't feel her there. Did you feel her there?
I mean, it was almost a thing of like, you guys probably shouldn't try to be funny.
Yeah,
don't do jokes.
Well, and he can be funny.
Yeah, but that's just because he's adult.
Sure, but he's good with a zinger. Like, her highlight last night being funny is when she did a little shimmy shimmy shake shake. That was that was like her best little moment. Okay, like, all right, Hillary. And she was like so proud of herself that she let her hair down there for a second. What do you think Hillary does for fun? Let me see.
She curls up on her couch.
Let's Google this.
Reads a good book with a cup of tea and an Afghan.
What does Hillary do for fun? I should have done this beforehand. What does Hillary do for fun? Nothing has ever been, no one's ever searched this before, ever. Can you tell him? Okay, here we go. May 24th from the Washington Examiner. What does Hillary do for fun? Let's see. A recent New York Times CBS News poll also showed a majority of voters don't think the former Secretary of State shares their values. Doesn't say anything about fun there. It's nothing about fun. Talk about her. They talk about her just in professional terms. I don't know if this is good radio, me searching. But seriously, what does she do for fun? Do you think she plays Monopoly? 312-981-7200. I'll give away pizza for somebody who like nails what Hillary does for fun. What does Hillary do for fun? Like, what's the most fun thing Hillary's ever done?
Crickets. I found a 17 little known facts about Hillary Clinton article. This is in Huffington Post.
What do you got?
One of them says that she had imaginary conversations with idols such as Eleanor Roosevelt.
Okay, that's
so that's something she does for fun. Maybe that, she sits down to tea and talks to one of her idols.
Okay, that's legit frightening. You gotta,
she's Leslie Knope.
Oh, nice.
She is Leslie Knope.
She is.
I mean, I'm sure they got everything that Leslie Knope is from Hillary Clinton. So,
all right.
But she's the real life living Leslie Knope.
For one summer during law school, she gutted fish at a processing plant. Maybe she had fun.
Not fun.
That could have been fun.
Could not be fun. Zero chance that's fun.
She puts hot sauce on everything.
Knife
salad.
Goes in, guts come out.
Yeah.
Hot sauce on everything is a moderately... Right.
Kind of a party.
It's like
that's Hillary Clinton partying is when she puts hot sauce on a salad.
I'd want to know what kind of hot sauce.
Yeah, not fun. You got anything else for fun? Like literally she.
Oh, she reads detective novels for cheap thrills is what she calls them.
Not
she
fun.
Really likes detective novels.
By my judgment of fun, that's not fun.
But she loves cheap thrills.
I love cheap thrills.
Come on.
I mean, her and Bill, like even. What does Hillary do for fun? 312-981-7200. All right, give me well, let's go. Let's move along. Next
that, up. That is just not accurate. I was against it once it was finally negotiated and the terms were laid out. I wrote about that in...
You called it the gold standard.
About, well, I hope...
You called it the gold standard of trade deals. You said it's the finest deal you've ever seen.
No.
And then you heard what I said about it and all of a sudden you were against it.
Well, Donald, I know you live in your own reality, but that is not... The facts. The facts are, I did say I hoped it would be a good deal, but when it was negotiated, which I was not responsible for, I concluded it wasn't.
So I don't even know what was said there. It wasn't a Donald reality. I know they're talking about NAFTA. I mean, it's unbelievable. You cannot get that entertainment anywhere. You heard me when I said that, then you started to believe what I said.
Well, you might be able to come Thanksgiving with Aunt John and Uncle... Or Aunt John, with Uncle John and Aunt Betty at a Thanksgiving table. I'm sure there's going to be some bickering.
Right? I mean, I think like 5 years down the line, I think they're going to be best friends. These two are going to be just buddies. You're not feeling me on that.
I don't think so.
Making
no.
faces.
No.
I think one day, because Donald is just doing, he'll do anything possible to win, right? I mean, who knows what this guy actually thinks? He's hiring somebody he just hired somebody who doesn't believe in climate change at all. Yeah, when climate change gets brought up last night and she tries to rake him over the coals that I believe in climate change? Donald doesn't. No, I don't. Yes, no, I never said that. No, no, no. It's like I actually think Donald does believe in climate change, but he knows he can't say that he believes in climate change. So who knows what the guy... Like, that's why I think these two could actually be friends someday, because he probably agrees with half the stuff that she's saying.
At the end of that clip, though, Donald Trump just said not. Like, when you're getting in an argument with your friend, while she's talking, he just said not into the microphone, and that was it.
Do we have that one?
Yeah, if you just want to hear this.
The facts are, I did say I hoped it would be a good deal, but when it was negotiated, which I was not responsible for, I concluded it wasn't.
He just said not.
Yeah, that wasn't about climate change, but yes, not. I mean, it's to me... You can't beat that entertainment. 84 million for the first one. Next one's going to be 95. By the way, I'm trying to like sort of laugh through this whole thing because that's my strategy. Because it's just really terrifying what's going on. People are calling in with ideas what Hillary does for fun. Sean, what does Hillary do for fun? 312-981-7200. 720 WGN. What do you got, Sean?
Hey, I'll be voting for Hillary, but I hate to make fun of her. But I'll tell you what, she reads Harlequin novels.
She does what?
She reads Harlequin novels. You know, the romance novels, the really cheap ones.
So you think have you read that she actually does this, Sean, or are you just making this up?
I am totally making it up.
Yeah. So you think that Hillary just cuddles up on a couch and reads romantic novels and then...
Like horrible romance novels, absolutely.
Mm. I mean, it's not a stretch, because she does read those mystery novels.
It doesn't sound that much fun. To me, Sean. Like, was that fun to you? Would you want to do that for fun?
My God, no, but maybe that's what entertains her and hence she finds fun.
Like, do you think, when's the last time Hillary, give me a water ski, give me a tennis, give me a, maybe some yoga, give me, how about just a brisk walk? Does she take a brisk walk? Like, in a little nature walk for Hillary.
Hey, man, reading is fundamental.
I agree. I love to read, so.
Yeah, okay, fine. Thanks, Sean. Appreciate you.
No problem. Thanks. Bye.
312-981-7200. What does Hillary do for fun? Deep thoughts here. I'm Mark Harmon, sitting in for Patty. Just want to make sure my name's attached to this segment. Hey, Ruth. What's going on, Ruth?
Hi. I like this. In her past and present, she meets with the kids that she went to high school with. Now, high school is one of the biggest, greatest formulative years in a person's life, and she meets with not only ladies, men too, that were her friends in high school. And they get together, and they've been loyal to each other for a long, long time, for a lifetime. And that doesn't always happen with the majority of us. We lose contact with these people that we had some really good, solid groundwork with as kids.
Yeah, no, that's actually a very nice call by you, Ruth, and it's true. She does have some longtime friends, and it does speak to someone's character when they have had friends for life like that. I agree with you. That's a very good call, Ruth.
Okay, thank you. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Did I win?
Yes, you won. I don't think we're giving anything away, but Ruth?
You said pizza.
Did I say pizza? Oh, I don't think
you sure did.
Did I? Okay, Ruth. Well, since you're asking for things, I like when people ask for things. That's cool. Hang on, Ruth.
Yeah, got
it. There you go. Craig hates that we're giving something away. Do we not have anything to give away? We do. Patty, sorry, I'm dipping into your prize vault. But, you know, Ruth wanted to win. Ruth deserves something. All right. We're not giving away any more gifts. You're just contributing for fun because we're talking about what Hillary does for fun. 312-981-7200. Patrick, what does Hillary do for fun?
Hey, I see her on Saturday Night Live. It looks like when she goes on that, she's having fun. So I got to admit, like, when they give her the opportunity, she's like, oh, yeah, I'll do that. That's fun.
But you had a little bit of a bad sell there, Patrick. Let me try that one more time, speaking a little slower.
Going on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yes, yeah, she's been on that a number of times. The other thing I think she does for fun is she sits at home and admires her normal-sized hands.
Her normal-sized hands?
Right.
Okay. Thank you, Patrick. Appreciate it. See, now, when she's
going... Thank you.
You got it, my man. Thank you. So when she goes on Saturday Night Live, like, to me, that's business. I mean, she's promoting the old Hill. Maybe she's enjoying it. I'm sure. Like, the Don certainly enjoys the attention. I think Hillary probably enjoys it as well, I guess. But that's like that. That's more like, I can't say that that's fun. Like, she's being asked to do that. Like, what does she willingly do? What does she create for herself? It's not like she's calling up Saturday Night Live. Average size hands, huh? Should I know about that and I just don't? Esmeralda? Is that a thing?
Because Donald has small hands.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I missed that one. Donald Trump's actual hand size is revealed. You know what they say about people with small hands, Esmeralda?
They can work on little things.
Right, that. And they have small feet. Awkward. John, you're on 720 WGN. What's up, John?
Oh, having a good night. That's listening to you guys.
Thanks, John.
I would say Hillary likes to do word jumbles.
Word jumbles.
She uses names of women that Bill has messed around with.
Oh, John, are you having a judgment about that?
No, I'm not.
Are you sure?
Well, maybe a little, but hey, you know what?
You know, Donald's been married and divorced three times.
Exactly. You know, you were talking about Hillary and Don being buddies later on. If you think about it, George Bush and Bill Clinton are friends now.
Well, look at W and Michelle Obama. They're like nearly making out on TV. Go W.
Can't blame him. She's a good-looking woman.
She sure is. Go W. Thanks, John. Appreciate you.
Thank you. Bye now.
I do find it interesting that there's not one president, sitting or former, who is alive right now that is voting for the Don, including W and H. And I know that Jeb got torched by Donald, so that's a part of it. But I do find that interesting that they're all voting for the Hill. And I wouldn't say that W and Hillary were best of friends always. But it seems like something's going on there. All right, quick timeout. I have a debate expert, somebody who can talk strategy on what to do in the moment. That's right after 12:30. His name is Nick Wright. He's an excellent guest. Very entertaining. 720 WGN. I really enjoyed that conversation, what Hillary does for fun. And just for the record, I mean, I could learn to do more things for fun, too. I don't want to put Hillary out on a branch by herself. I could branch out and do more fun things, although I am pretty fun. Like, I consider myself, I mean, just a jolly old fellow.
Out of all the jobs that someone would get, though, if they didn't want to party a lot, president would be one that I'd be okay with a bookworm getting. You know, someone who's just working all the time. I'm cool with that.
Yeah, sure. But I want some personality in my president. I want to be entertained. It's one of the things, like him or dislike him, like Barack Obama's just cool. Dude hoops, listens to cool music. He's got, you know, different interests. Like, you imagine ever seeing Hillary, like, front row at a sporting event? She would look so awkward, it'd be unbelievable. Like, anything she would do would be awkward. Like, Barack Obama on a beach, chilling out, normal. Hillary on a beach, weird. Barack Obama at the restaurant, eating a cheeseburger, normal. Hillary having a cheeseburger, super weird. That's legit true. We need to cool her up a little bit. If she's really going to be the president, which is most definitely in doubt. Like, the Don could, he can mow down on a double cheese and have it look normal. Like, and then the Don, too, I know we got to get to news here. But, like, the Don, the first time I ever went to the U.S. Open in New York, which is the greatest sporting event known to man, it's not as expensive as it sounds, and everybody should go, and your life will be better. There's a reason why you're listening to the show right now. It's because you're meant to go to the U.S. Open. I don't know why I feel the need to get everybody to the U.S. Open, but I just love it that much. The Don was sitting front row the first time I ever went. And I was amused. There he is, Donald Trump. Wow, cool, the Don's here. And he was sitting front row, too, on court two, which was cool of the Don. Like, court one, that's where you would think he would be. But he went court two because it was a better match. Like, Donald knew a little something about tennis. I was impressed. Okay, we'll move along now. Nick Wright, expert debater. The debating strategies. What should the two candidates be doing differently? What can they do better? That is next. 720 WGN. I'm Mark Harmon with you till 2 tonight. That was an enjoyable conversation. What does Hillary do for fun? 630 smokes cigars. Let's see. 708 watches King of Queens. 815 shops at Sears Roebuck for new pantsuits. That's not very nice. 708, she puts hot sauce on her chicken. That's really not that fun. Plays with her grandchildren from the 708. That's a good family maneuver there, but, you know, and I guess fun. I have a niece. I like playing with her. She's 9. I would say Hillary and Bill in the Secret Service have a nice solid game of Euchre. 630, she does marathon sessions of the World of Warcraft with her guild. There's some good stuff going on here. What does Hillary do for fun? Pilates is in there. 45-minute spin class at the YMCA. You get the gist. People have high expectations that Hillary is actually doing fun things. Nick Wright's a very fun guy. He's an expert debater, and he's a phenomenal radio host, and he joins us now on 720 WGN. And Nick's a workaholic himself and does weird things like, what do? You, like, build Lego sets?
I used to, yeah, nano blocks, miniature Legos, yeah. Hi, Carm. How are you?
I'm great, Nick. And you were doing that as an adult, correct? Like, that was like 3 months ago. It's not like used to when you were 6.
It was like 3 years ago, but yeah, I completed the set.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, good.
Your audience has no idea where I work, why you're talking to me, what's going on. You haven't exactly set this interview up in the most delicate of manners, but I'm still happy to be here.
Well, hold on a second. I've promoted you like 6 times already on the show. I said that you're an expert debater. What else would you like me to throw in there? You watch with a very...
I work for FS1.
Okay, I can...
There you go.
Okay, I didn't know that was on the table. Nick works for Fox Sports 1. You can see him debating Skip Bayless and many others. He'll be on with Colin Cowherd. He's a sports guy, but he's also incredibly interested in politics. I used to do a radio show with Nick. I was right in generally every argument we ever had, and he knew it, but yet I would lose some of them because Nick is that good at debating. Anything else that I should put in there?
There we go. So how's it going, Carl?
It's going great, Nick, and I really do appreciate you taking time. And you're out in L.A., so I don't have to appreciate, you know, it's not like past your bedtime, 10:37 right now, although you probably would be watching some tape about LeBron and figuring out, you know, how he's going to surpass Michael, and you would, you know, so you could call up myself and others and present that point. But so, hey, let's talk election here. I love your viewpoint. You see things three steps ahead of the game. So you're watching last night. How do you think, if you were advising Donald after watching last night as he steps into debate number two, what would you tell the Don on how he could do better if you were his counsel? You were strategizing with the Don.
Well, I don't think there's anything you can tell him. Because he's going to just do whatever the hell he wants. But I'm watching last night, and to me, the debate last night can just be chopped into two parts. And it's about 25, 30 minutes in. The first 30 minutes or so, Trump was winning. And he was winning because he was just in very vague terms talking about trade and talking about the establishment and things. The reality is this, just the way the electoral map works. If Trump doesn't win Pennsylvania, in order to win the election, he has to sweep everything else. He has to get Ohio, Virginia, North Carolina, Florida, Nevada, Iowa. He has to sweep all of it if he can't get Pennsylvania, right? So in order for him to have any path to victory, he's got to convince white working class voters in Pennsylvania and Ohio that they got screwed and it's Hillary's fault, or Hillary will continue to screw them. And so that's why he just kept bringing up NAFTA and trade and nonsense about forward moving people out of the country, because even if it's a word salad, that is the type of thing, if you live in that area and your job no longer exists, he can resonate there. And he was doing a decent job. And then Hillary did the only thing she had to do, which was insult him one time, and it was over from there. The moment she said, "You got a loan from your father for $14 million," the debate ended. Trump does not have it in him to not respond. He does not have it in him to not let it get under his skin. And from that moment moving forward, she could just sit there and let him wear himself out and let him get upset at every perceived slight and look like a fool. I thought she left a few openings there afterwards, and we can get into those specifics later if you'd like. But he did exactly what I'm sure she planned on that he would do, which is, I am going to get under his skin. And he doesn't hold women in a high regard. He certainly doesn't hold me in a high regard. He is not used to anyone talking down to him, much less someone that isn't a white male. And now he's going to have to deal with this for 90 minutes, and he just, after 25 or 30, couldn't handle it.
So, okay, here, let's talk about the $14 million comment. If you're advising Don and she brings it up, well, your dad loans you $14 million. That's how you started your business, buddy. I mean, what do you do if you're him in that moment?
What you don't do is call it a very small loan, because that alienates people. And what you don't do is take it as an insult. What you do is very simply say, "Listen, Secretary Clinton's correct. My father was a very good businessman, and he did help me. And I'm glad he was able to help me. And with that money that he gave me, as he was a very good businessman, I became one of the world's greatest businessmen. I turned that $14 million into billions and billions of dollars." Now, that might actually be a lie. That might not be true. But that's a good answer. And he can, even if he was savvy at all, he could use that. He's big on the estate tax, because that's a big thing in the Republican Party these days. He could even have flipped that to an actual topical issue if he had any sense of policy whatsoever. He could say, "Hillary, with your proposed 65% estate tax on estates that size, my company doesn't get off the ground. My company, which has employed tens of thousands of people and is one of the best brands in the world." Now, again, I think it's all lies and nonsense, but that doesn't matter. You can lie and nonsense your way in a debate as long as you seize on the moments. And the moment for him was not to acknowledge that it happened and call it a very small amount, just like the moment for him was not to, when she said you rooted for the housing bubble to collapse, for the bubble to burst, either lie and say, "No, I didn't," or just eat it. Just take it. Don't lean into the mic when it's not even your time to speak and say, "That's called business. Whose votes are you winning there? Who are you showing?" I mean, even people that like your business acumen don't like the idea that you are rooting for American calamity. It was just self-enforced wound after self-enforced wound, which is why I guess, which is why Hillary was a little more cautious than I thought maybe she could have been. There were a lot of moments where if Hillary would have just turned to Donald and asked him a direct question, I think he would have been told, I think it would have been a Rick Perry's, I'm going to close three branches of government, but I can't name the third moment. She never did that. But by the end of it, when he's ranting about how he could have brought up Lewinsky, but he didn't, like, she didn't need to because he ruined himself.
Nick Wright, Fox Sports 1, joining us here as we talk the art of debating on 720 WGN. So, okay, with Hillary, and she's, first of all, a lot of people are talking about how her body demeanor, how she's looking in the camera, how she's laughing, and how she's just basically dismissing him. What would you tell her about that? Like, if you're her, are you just sitting there with a real stern look on your face the whole time?
She can't do that. Because she's a woman and people are going to say she needs to be smiling. So she's not allowed to just look super serious. But I think the only, if I were coaching her, I would tell her up the dramatics a little bit to where you are openly dismissing him because it will drive him nuts. Hillary found a way to jam in at the end the prepackaged story about the Miss Universe that he called Miss Piggy and that he called Miss Housekeeping. They had a whole ad ready the moment the debate was over. Usually on things like that, if you know, hey, we've got this lady, she's going to do interviews, we've got an ad, you get to that early because you can't miss not getting it in. It struck me Hillary forgot to get to that and then found a way to bring it up in the final moments. But it worked because today Donald Trump went on Fox News and relitigated it, said she gained a tremendous amount of weight, said she was the worst Miss Universe ever. This is a trend. If you criticize the man and he views you as his lesser than because you are a woman, because you are disabled, because you're a minority, he's going to flip out. He did it to Megyn Kelly. He did it to the New York Times reporter. He did it to the cons. Like, that's all you have to do is get him to be himself. And that's, and Hillary got it. Like, there's no reason we should be talking about Miss Universe this morning. And we wouldn't be. That would just be a debate moment. But he wants to talk about it more because he's so angered by it. That's all you got to do against this guy. And, like, that's why. So let me give you an example. If I'm debating Donald Trump, or if I'm debating a regular person, and they say we should have taken the oil, when it's my turn to talk, I very simply say, well, let's just ignore the fact that that's against the Geneva Convention because I'm sure Mr. Trump doesn't know what that is. I have a very simple question, Mr. Trump. How do we take the oil? What does that mean? And after he stumbles all over himself, you then come out and say, you realize saying take the oil in Iraq is just as common sense as saying take the sand. It's not possible. What are we doing, a giant straw? What are we doing? The only way you take the oil is if you occupy the country and with a business, with a corporation that then has to be protected by troops for decades. You can't just suck up all the oil from the ground. And where are you going to store it? At Costco? It's billions of gallons of oil.
Right, right. But people don't want, like, plausibility and what's possible and what's not is...
Of course, which is why it's a fine line for Trump to say. But it's you get away with implausible things until someone turns to you and says, how? How? Yes, I agree. I think you have a wonderful point. We should have taken the oil. How do we take it? Like, those are the moments where people who are totally unprepared get unmasked. Like, you saw when Donald Trump says, and it's not that Hillary was amazing yesterday. It was that all she had to do was let him self-immolate and also not be sick. Like, if she had, like, started coughing or sniffling or tripped, that would have been a huge deal. But once she gets past those things, then her bar is cleared essentially because of what he's going to be doing. And it's just, this is basic stuff. When he says, I knew you were going to ask me about the birther thing, but then still doesn't have an answer that anyone believes, then that's just, it's just such a lack of preparation. It's, I mean, it'd be impeachable if you were already the president.
Right, right. Well,
and that's a pride thing. Real quick, and then I'll shut up.
No, you're fine.
But that's a pride thing. Like, this is Trump. People are going to keep bringing up the birther thing with Trump until he squares the circle of claiming he ended the issue in 2011, but then the long record of him continuing to talk about it until 2016. So at some point, if you're going to drop the birther issue, which he claims to want to, you have to say this sentence. President Obama presented his birth certificate in 2011, and then it's a choose-your-own-adventure, one of two answers. Either A, if I'm being perfectly honest, I believed him then and there. However, I thought it was politically inbound to continue to hint otherwise, to try to stoke some of the fire that he has kept burning, blah, 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 blah.
That would be gross. Or, go ahead. What's your
idea? It'd be gross, but then it's over. And, by the way, that happens to be the truth. Or you simply say, he presented the birth certificate in 2011. I did not believe it. Many others did not believe it. Since I have gotten this far, I am more privy to more serious national security and high-level intelligence, and it's been brought to my attention by someone who has to remain confidential its validity. I was wrong. You can do either one of those things, and you're never asked about it again. But either one of those things involves swallowing a modicum of pride. Hillary was asked about her emails. It was her shortest answer of the night. You know why? Because she knows anytime we're talking about emails, I am losing. So I just got to eat it. I screwed up. I shouldn't have done it. I wish I'd have done it differently. I'm sorry. My bad. And you just got to eat it. If you can eat it, no one's talking about emails this morning. But if you refuse to do that, then you're not going to have the debate on your terms.
It's a great point. I mean, that's exactly what she did. I'm done. Yes, right. Yeah, I would have done it differently. And okay, let's move on. What do you got? What's next?
Right. What else can you then say? Like, Trump can bring it up again, which he didn't. And you know why he didn't? Because she just said, that's on me. Like, there's no weaving around it. And Trump also missed. When she said her biggest line was the stamina thing, right? And she very needlessly, after listing 112 countries and this treaty and that treaty and this negotiation, she then foolishly said, or if you can negotiate, or if you can testify in front of Congress for 11 hours, that's a self-inflicted wound on Hillary's end. If Trump just had the most basic debating skills to jump right in and say, well, Hillary, that's a skill I'll never have, because my terrible decision making won't result in the loss of American life as yours did at Benghazi, which is why you were testifying, ma'am. Like, Hillary brought up Benghazi on her own as a winning trait, and he couldn't seize upon that. Like, I'm certain the moment she said that, the people in her camp were like, holy bleep, why would she bring that up? But he's in such a fever dream about, you have better temperament, or are you out of your bleeping mind, that he can't hear it. To win a debate, you got to hear what your opponent says and seize on the openings. And he might as well have been standing in a soundproof room.
Yeah, because, right. Well, he's never in the moment. He's a nonstop spin. So it's hard to actually be present and hear what's going on when you've got a million things flowing through your head. Not that I can relate to that at all. So all right. One last question, Nick, and then I get breaks and news and all that stuff. She's still trying to figure out how to connect with the American people. Like, she's this workaholic, pantsuit wearing, stoic.
Well, the pantsuit wearing thing is just, I mean,
no, well, it's
just sexism.
Yeah, right.
I mean, what else can she wear? She's a near 70-year-old woman. No, she can't wear a cocktail dress.
Right, no, I get it. But there's a way that she still needs to connect that she hasn't done. Like, there's a certain percentage of people out there that are voting for Donald because they think they're a part of some movement, right? This is, we're gonna make America great. It's a very small percentage, but people actually think that they're a part of something. Whereas with her, I don't think people think they're a part of anything. They're a part of, like, the same.
Right. But so that's where, and this is just a difference of debate strategy, and I'm not saying I'm right, but it would appear, whether right or wrong, her camp agrees with me. That if she tries to get into a popularity contest with a reality television star and someone who has been famous for being famous before, well before the Kardashians made that concept famous, then she's losing. What she has to do is make Trump utterly unacceptable to anyone with an education, make him utterly unacceptable to women who are not women who are paying attention, and he's made himself utterly unacceptable to black people and to the vast majority of Latino people. Like, at some point, and I hate to play racial politics, but the demographics are very simple. He is so overwhelmingly popular with under less than a college education white males. Like, in the latest NBC poll, he was at 76%. She was not at 20%. He's up more than 50 points on uneducated white males. She's up about 90 points in the black community. She's up about 40 points in the Latino community. She's up slightly in the white educated community, but very slightly. The group that is not, and none of those are moving. Women, especially educated women, will decide this election. And if she wanted to play to, hey, I would be fun to hang out with, that is, you might lose that case. But if she is very fervent on, I am going to make it very clear that this man not only is not someone that you want to be president, but someone who you would be nervous letting watch your house, someone who you wouldn't let sit in for you at a homeowners association meeting, someone that you would be terrified would mortify you at a cocktail party. I'm going to make it clear that that is who he is. And if and when that happens, and I think last night was a big step in that direction, then he just doesn't have the numbers. Then you just can't win 270 electoral votes when the Democrats have about 215 locked up before the election cycle ever begins because of the big states. Like, the numbers are already not on your side. The only way Trump, like, that's why for trade, to circle back to the beginning, that's a winning issue for him, because some of those big states that Democrats typically have unlocked, Michigan, Wisconsin, maybe even Minnesota, Pennsylvania, which has been blue, even though people keep calling the swing state blue for election after election. Those states, if you can just convince them it's about the jobs that have been stolen from you by NAFTA, maybe you can win. But if you're talking about birtherism and beauty pageants and Rosie O'Donnell deserved it, then you're sunk. And she got him to do it, and she'll get him to do it two more times. There is no 70-year-old man in America that learned self-control for the first time in his life in a 3-week span. It's not possible.
I would agree with that. You have some interesting responses on the text line. This guy is great is one of those, and that's coming in from a bunch of people. And then we've got this guy is delusional. Doesn't that make you feel...
Like, listen, I can be delusional, but just understand this real quick. Just quickly.
Yeah.
After Hillary had her worst week ever, she calls, you know, half of his supporters deplorable, which probably fair. She should have said.
Why can't the half that's not the deplorables? Why are they so angry about it? Hey, I'll go.
Regardless.
Okay, go ahead.
Her worst week ever. She does that, and then she has a Weekend at Bernie's moment trying to get into a limo. Like, that ain't great. There have been these fever dreams on the right that she has a body double, that she's dying. And then all of a sudden, people like me that heard that were like, well, that's craziness. You then see her just like her limp body fall and they throw her into the limo. And you're like, well, I mean, so something's happening here. Even in that moment, the worst of her worst, she's up 4 in Pennsylvania, 7 in Virginia, 7 in New Hampshire. She wins those 3 states. She is at 273. She can lose Nevada, Iowa, Ohio, North Carolina, Florida. I'm leaving one other swing state. I apologize. Trump can run the board if she wins those 3. At her lowest moment, she's up at least 4 in all of those 3. I say that to say this. He was the one that had to have some significant event. The race staying where it is a loss for him, no matter what anyone tries to tell you about, oh, he could win Florida. He can win Florida. He can win Florida and Ohio and North Carolina and still come up short. If she's sitting at 273 and 270 wins, you've got to do something. And what you can't do is scoff the entire night and then walk in the spin room and say, next time I'm bringing up Lewinsky. That ain't going to win you the election, man.
Yeah. Nick Wright, Fox Sports. Thank you, sir. Appreciate you, Nicky.
Absolutely. Anytime. Talk to you later.
All right, Nick Wright, Fox Sports 1, my guy. Quick timeout. We went a little long there. Hope you enjoyed it. I did. 720 WGN. 720 WGN. I'm Mark Carmen. Patty off tonight. Nick DiGilio will be here in his normal slot in 51 minutes. So I was reading a couple interesting things today. Why do we hate Hillary Clinton? A lot of people hate Hillary Clinton. Let's see. I just got a great text. Let's see here. Let's see. Love listening to you and I'm enjoying your show, but never will I vote for Mrs. Clinton. And I am a college graduate suburban woman. To which I wrote back, all good, you're not alone, because she's not. And then she says, I know, I have a majority of college graduated upper middle class girlfriends that are with me. Thank you. And I have arguments. Arguments is a little bit strong. I have discussions, let me say it like that, with friends who are just with you. And the whole college educated thing, I feel like there's like some, well, they do have a college degree, so their vote is legitimate. I don't care if you got a college degree or if you don't have a college degree. What I do care is that you are like doing something with your life. Like if it's, you know, if you didn't go to college, but yet you're functioning in society, you're making a couple dollars, you can provide for yourself. I don't care if you went to college. I went to college. Was going to be in the business school. Didn't have a good enough grade GPA. Was going to be in the communication school. Didn't have a good enough GPA. What's next? Oh, well, okay. Liberal arts, baby. So I got a psychology degree. Now, I don't know why I'm crushing myself down to make this point, but I just did that. So and my point is that I wish that I had focused more back then. If I had an opportunity to do it again, I would be a way better student.
Your point is also that even though you graduated college, that's not necessarily where the value comes from in your vote.
I mean, I grew. I learned about myself, but I played a lot of basketball, and I had a lot of fun. So somebody who didn't go to school is actually working. That's cool. That's a little bit of a sidebar here. So, but this is interesting. Why do they hate Hillary? And this one comes from the New York Times, right? And it was pretty interesting when I want to read the right paragraph here. Clinton's career appears from the outside to be all-consuming. Her husband is her co-politician. Her daughter works at the Clinton Foundation. Her friendships appear to have been formed at networking gatherings. People who work closely with her adore her and say she is warm and caring. But it's hard from the outside to think of any non-career or pre-career aspect to her life. Except for a few grandma references, she presents herself as a resume and a policy brief. For example, her campaign recently released a biographical video called Fighter. It's filled with charming and quirky old photos of her fighting for various causes. But then when the video cuts to a current interview with Clinton herself, the lighting is perfect, the setting is perfect, her costume is perfect. She looks less like a human being and more like an avatar for some corporate brand. So I'm wondering if that's like, is that true? Like people just don't look at her like she's a human?
I find that way of thinking to make no, it doesn't make any sense because I'll say it, I said it before you. For the president of the United States, I wouldn't mind a robot. And I'm not saying Hillary Clinton is one, but I really wouldn't. Someone who works all the time, who doesn't really have fun. It's the president of my country. I would love for that person to be the most serious human I've ever met. I wouldn't mind that. Right. I don't know why we need – you said earlier that you like seeing Obama out and doing fun things.
Right.
But to lead the country, I don't need that. I just might enjoy that.
Yeah, but I hear what you're saying, and rationally it makes sense, but it's also...
But they're celebrities. The president is in some way a celebrity.
People want to relate to who they're voting for. They want to feel connected.
It doesn't make any sense. If you were asking someone to lead you on an expedition, you wouldn't pick the friendliest guy. You'd pick the guy with the most skills. If we were in the desert or something and we had to pick a leader, we'd pick the guy who had the best skills.
No question. Give me the guy who knows what he's doing.
Exactly.
How am I going to survive?
Right. And I don't care if this dude doesn't make a lot of jokes. He's going to lead me out of the desert.
Right. But we don't see. That's the other thing. As bad as things are, there's very few of us. Let's be real here. There's very few of us who feel like we're in the desert. If you're living in the inner city and you have terrible schools and you can't walk outside your apartment without the fear of getting shot, then you feel like you're in the desert. But the majority of us, things are, as much as we complain, things are pretty okay.
No, I agree with that too, actually. I think that when we look back on Obama's presidency, we're going to see a lot of good things happened. We're going to be able to say that a lot of restorative things happened in our economy.
Right, and I get that there's a ton of people struggling out there. Overworked, underpaid, healthcare costs are through the roof. I mean, there's a million, it's a huge challenge out there. But I also feel like, you know, we avoided a huge, you know, the worst economic collapse of all time, and we've stabilized. So I don't sense like an enormous desperation to what you're talking about, Greg, that we have to have somebody that exactly knows what they're doing.
I meant that as an exaggeration. I don't think we're actually in the desert in our economy or in any way this country. But that's what Trump says. He says that we got to make America great again. I just think that...
Well, and we are in the desert in some ways, but go ahead.
No, I just think that no matter what, for the president, no matter how hard this next 4 years is going to be, no matter how many challenges they face, I would be more comfortable with someone who could face all those challenges than someone who makes me laugh.
No, I got you. Mm-hmm. Well, that's where we kind of move into like bias. Because.
No, you're right. Because I talk to people who will vote for someone and I respect them, but then they tell me who they're voting for and I get confused.
Right. I mean, have you, Esmeralda, I don't want to put you in the corner here, but I'm going to put you under the spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
Have you in your lifetime, have you voted on both sides of the aisle?
Because
I haven't.
I don't think so, no.
Yeah.
I have.
You have?
Yeah.
So, okay. And I give you credit for that.
I've only voted 3 times.
And you've been on both sides. And
I've been on both sides of the aisle.
Okay. Well, I give you credit for that.
Yeah.
Because it's interesting. You know, if you listen to Steve Cochran in the morning, as you should, starting at 5, well, Steve Grzan starts at 5, but you get the point. Starting at 6, I guess. You know, Steve is, he just seems like he's very much on both sides in his voting life, which it's why, amongst the fact that Steve makes me laugh, but just listening to how he's gone about the election, it's why I've really enjoyed listening to him, because he's been killing Trump, just killing him. But he's, you know, he's not exactly throwing a ton of love at Hillary. And Hillary is somebody that I don't think he ever thought that he would vote for. But, and I don't know who he's going to vote for. He hasn't told me. But it certainly sounds like he's going to vote for Hillary. Whereas some people never, ever, 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 ever. So to actually be, like, clear on, you know, that where you're biased and, like, what's best for the country and what's the fair vote and what's the right thing to do. And it...
Do you think a lot of people?
A lot of people just can't do that. They're unable to do that.
Do you think a lot of people who vote on one side all the time have one core issue? I find that a lot of people who vote one way every chance they get, it's because there's this one issue that their side agrees with that the other side doesn't, and that's all that really matters to them.
Yeah, well, and see, that's interesting too, because, you know, for me, I think everybody should be voting on issues. How do you feel about gun control? Where are you on pro-choice, pro-life? What do you think is the proper way to grow the economy? I mean, these are all really clear choices. But I think a lot of people are socially liberal but fiscally conservative. And they really want a moderate. Which is why I think if somebody other than the Don was running, say Kasich had been the candidate, I think he would have won in a runaway. I mean, I think that's pretty clear. even with the way the electoral map lines up. Down the middle. But again, that gets how we started the very the beginning of the show. I just think the guy was just so ridiculously entertaining and so different that people were unconscious about it, but they just wanted more of the show. This dude is making me more interested in politics than I have been in forever. So I'm going to vote for him because I want to be entertained and I value entertainment. 312-981-7200. Phone number. Text line as well. So let me read one more thing about Clinton. Clinton's unpopularity is akin to the unpopularity of a workaholic. Workaholism is a form of emotional self-estrangement. Workaholics are so consumed by their professional activities that their feelings don't inform their most fundamental decisions. Which is a very interesting thing for you to think about and for me to think about in anything that you're choosing to do. How do you feel about that? You know, where are you at? Like actually being in touch with yourself and making decisions, which is what they're saying that Hillary's not. The professional role comes to dominate the personality and encroaches on the normal intimacies of the soul. We're getting deep here. I enjoy that. As Martin Lloyd Jones once put it, whole cemeteries could be filled with the sad tombstone, born a man, died a doctor. Ouch. Let me get Johnny in here just talking about the top 1%. What's up, Johnny?
Morning, gentlemen. How we doing?
We're doing good, Johnny.
Here's one thing that perplexes me about the myriad of our choices here. I guess probably, over the last 8, maybe 12 years, these election cycles, we've been talking about, you know, the top 1% or the top 1/10 of 1% having all the wealth and controlling everything. Now we've got almost the majority of our country looking to give one the keys. I mean, and he'll brag about, you know, not paying taxes. And I mean that just blows my mind. I don't understand. That's a big topic of people I discuss this with, and they are dead set on this guy steering the ship right. I don't understand that.
Well, hang on, Johnny, because I want to follow up on that. I find it amazing, just as you do, that he says right into the microphone last night, that's right, that's good business. I don't pay taxes. I try to pay no taxes.
That's smart. That makes me smart.
Dude.
What?
We're all sitting here paying 40%, and you've got creative accountants and dude, that you're paying huge money to, and you're not paying any dough. That makes you gross, is what it makes you.
Right.
But that doesn't seem to matter to anyone. And there's a part of us too, like, hey, you know, yeah, that's right. I don't want to pay a lot of taxes either. So it's like, I think people look up to him. You're right. I don't want to pay taxes. I want to do what you do.
Right. The bluest of blue collar folks that I know are so leaning toward this guy. And it's like, do you not get this? Are you not hearing what this guy is saying? And believe me. Well, when the election cycles come around, I too try to listen to both sides. I want someone to make some sense to me, to touch me somehow. And you know, I'll tell you, over the last, the Democratic convention, President Obama went up there and he said, you know what? He said to Bill Clinton up there in the stands, hey, Hillary's got more experience than we had coming into this.
Right, but that doesn't matter either, apparently.
Right, and yeah, it's a big mess.
Right. Good call, Johnny. Thanks, man.
Thank you, sir.
Have a great night. 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. That comment was unbelievable to me. That's right. I don't pay a lot of taxes. I absolutely don't.
You would assume most people would resent the 1%, especially the 1% if they don't pay taxes. So I am really surprised that doesn't matter more to most of us,
right?
Because we're not in that bracket.
Like, you're worth billions of dollars. I mean, you can pay taxes. Your life is not going to change. That's the greed. A lot of greed. But it's a part that's interesting to me that people respect it. And yes, when I'm doing my taxes, it's like, okay, make sure you got that expense there. Yes, I had that. Please deduct that. I did do that. I don't want to. But I'm writing that check every year, and they're taking out. I mean, and it's painful, but on some level, it's like, you know what? That is my debt to being in the greatest country on the planet and being able to say whatever the hell I want into this microphone and not have to go to jail or have some lunatic come in here and chop my head off. You know, I'm really happy that I live here. I'm willing to pay. I get that. But you know, it's really amazing what we value and what we don't. All right, quick timeout, 720 WGN. Get back to the politics after the 1:30 news. Just want to take 1 second to give props to the now 101 win Chicago Cubs. Are you kidding me? 6-4, they beat the Pirates tonight. The Cubs have won 101 games. Is that real? That's just amazing. John Lackey, 5 innings, 5 hits, 1 run, 1 earned. Walked 3, struck out 3, 93 pitches. It's a lot of pitches for 5 innings. Montgomery, Cahill, Wood, Carl Edwards Jr., Grimm, and Pena out of the pen. So, it's happening. Just so we all are, let me just take a deep breath. What's today? Today, the final regular season game is Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
The playoffs start a week from Friday. We're going to have extended coverage after every playoff game on 720 WGN. I hope I'm okay to say that on the air.
You are.
Good. This is it.
You know, I...
This is it.
This is a question... This is question you're getting a lot as a Cubs fan. Could it possibly be disappointing if they don't win the World Series because you are a Cubs fan? If they don't make it all the way, isn't that the Cubs being the Cubs?
Absolutely. They have to win the whole thing.
They have to win the whole thing.
That's correct.
And if they don't, though, are you going to be devastated?
Yes.
Okay. Why is that? I'm curious why that is for real passionate Cubs fans, because if they don't win, that's just them being your favorite team for the last 100-plus years.
We've had enough. It's been...
I think they're going to win. I think a lot of people think they're going to win. But if they don't, it's not Armageddon because...
It is.
It's just the Cubs being the Cubs.
I think I hear what you're saying,
right?
But I'm not hearing what you're saying.
Okay, because they're three-peating.
Right? I do think that too. I know that that's not realistic in baseball to predict three-peats. But when you look at, you've got two MVP candidates, both in their prime. You've got John Lester under contract for another year. You've got Kyle Hendricks coming into his prime. You've got Jake Arrieta, who will be in a contract year next year, who I was worried was going to break down this year because he threw so many more innings last year and he's still fine. There's no reason why they shouldn't be great next year too. Now, the baseball playoffs are crazy. Anything can happen. But they've been the best team in baseball all season long. And barring something terrible happening in the last 5 days here, they're coming into the playoffs healthy. Now, the San Francisco Giants terrify me. Or at least scare me a little bit. But the Nationals just lost their catcher. The Mets are banged up. I mean, they're the best team. If they get beat, it'll be an upset. Upsets happen. But 101-56. They're 45 games over 500. It's nuts. Hey, Chicago. All right, so I lied. I said I would just talk baseball for 2 minutes, but now people are texting in. It's 312-981-7200. I'm Mark Carmen, and for Patty. Patty will be back tomorrow, 224. Will you be irritated if the Cubs choke? Yes, I'll be extremely, extremely irritated. And I'm curious... Like, are you, okay, are we ready? Let's ask it that way. Because if we are ready, then we should be braced to the point that if they don't win it this year, this will be the biggest disappointment in the history of the team.
That's not possible. What you just said can't be possible.
No,
the Black Cat?
No.
The Miracle Mets?
Okay, but they didn't even make the playoffs.
But the playoffs were different then. Less teams made the playoffs.
Right, but listen, that team was done in the middle of September.
All right.
I mean, I wasn't around, but that's the reality. They got blown by and they were done. 1984 was a great team, but they came out of nowhere. Like, nobody expected that, and then they were up 2-0 in the Padres, and they blew it, and it was awful. Absolutely awful.
Okay, now wait a minute, because I know the next one you're going to talk about, you would remember quite well.
Oh, I'm going all through the whole thing now.
Okay.
Now I'm in the whole thing.
All right.
Now I'm going 89.
All right, okay, fine. I'll wait.
89, Boys of Zimmer. Team going into the year, the team they thought the team stunk. Don Zimmer thought they'd be lucky to win 80 games. He ended up having a miracle year, and then they got killed in the playoffs. Andre Dawson was on one leg. And everybody knew that team was not worthy. Even though I thought if they had won one game in San Francisco and brought it back home, they could have pulled it off. 224 texting in. Will you jump off a bridge if the Cubs lose? I think you want me to jump off a bridge. 224, I don't think you like me. That's okay. Maybe we can be friends. Listen. In 2003,
Let's go there.
In 2003.
Okay, so something very different, though. No matter how the season started, they did win.
I'm not saying in the
division.
Yeah, I'm not saying in the moment it'll be as painful.
Got it. Well, they did win the division, so they did not get 100 wins. I think they had like 80-something, but they played pretty well.
They were a 500 team all season long, and then they got hot down the stretch.
Okay. But they were how many outs from the World Series?
Five outs.
Five outs from the World Series.
Mm-hmm.
How could getting swept in the first round this year equate to that if that's what happened? Say that's what happened, that they get swept out of the first round. They're at home a week into October. Is that actually as big of a disappointment as five outs away and losing?
Well, okay. If that's what happens, let's just say for argument's sake, that's what happens. San Francisco Giants walk in here with Johnny Cueto and Jeff Samardzija, and they win games 1 and 2 at Wrigley, and the former Cub and his flowing hair is jumping around, and they go out to San Francisco and Madison Bumgarner's on the mound.
Painting a beautiful picture.
And then, I mean, that is possible.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Sure.
I wouldn't say it's
probable.
It isn't probable.
It is not.
It's not going to happen. But if that if that happened,
right?
I think the feeling would be one of, man, we've got this great team, but are they ever going to be good enough to do it in the playoffs? And if we can't win with this team, when are we ever going to win? That's kind of the thought process. Like, and I asked Theo Epstein out at Wrigley last week or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, do you feel that you're the favorite going into the playoffs? And he said, well, there's no other team that I'd rather go in here with, but it's not a meritocracy. Of which I had to look that word up. What the hell does that mean, Theo? You genius, you. And meritocracy, if you don't know, and thank you for not knowing and make me feel not stupid, which is unfair. But meritocracy means that winning based on merit, the fact that right now if you were going to award the World Series, someone the Cubs have had the best year, they should get the World Series. But that's not how the playoffs work. You have to earn it in the playoffs. You have to play the best at the end. But there would be a feeling like if they don't get over the hump here that fate is just never going to work out for them.
It's so difficult for you to talk about the idea that they don't win, isn't it? You're struggling with discussing this idea.
I just don't know what that looks like.
Yeah.
Like
they have to win.
I mean, listen.
As a Cubs fan, for you, this year, they have to win.
Sports tragedies happen all the time. I want to throw sports in there
because
this is not real life. But this would be a tough one to handle. 312-981-7200. I'd love to hear from Cub fans who are feeling A, confident, B, anxiety. C, like you've spent the whole season barely watching the team because it's just too much. And it's uncomfortable that they're this good. Like there's a certain identity in the lovable losers that'll be uncomfortable to lose. And I felt that in 03 when they were about to win and go to the World Series and they were five outs away. It just felt off to me. Like I didn't even know what that was. Like, oh no, our whole, we're not going to be quote unquote the Cubs anymore. But I'm ready for that. I'm ready for the transformation. Esmeralda, you okay up there?
Go Cubs!
Aren't you a Sox fan?
That was nice.
I am an everybody fan.
Okay.
Good for both of the teams.
That's boring. Pick a side.
No. I don't like that the city gets all broken up about that. We should unite. Be happy for each other.
This isn't about schools. This isn't about coming together. This is about good old-fashioned sports dislike.
I think a lot of the city is going to unite and be Fairweather Cubs fans during this playoffs,
though.
That's fine.
That's fine. And it's also fine if you stay in your own lane. When the White Sox won the World Series in 2005, I screamed no. It's embarrassing. But when Juan Uribe fired the ball across the diamond, and whatever Houston Astro was out by a half a step, I screamed in my apartment, no! To the point that the people above me came running down and banged on the door and like, hey, we got a baby that's asleep up here. And I'm like, I know, I hear your crying baby all the time. The White Sox just won the World Series for the first time since 1918. I had a moment. Apologize. He looked at me and knew I was crazy. And by the way, congratulations to the 2005 White Sox on their fluke playoff run. Cubs will win, the world will end, and we won't have to worry about the election from the 312. That's an interesting one. For you diehard Hillary fans out there and diehard Cub fans, would you trade a Cubs World Series to have Donald win? I know you're out there. You love Hillary, or at least you hate Donald, and you're a Cub fan. Would you take Donald in the White House with a Cubs World Series? 312-981-7200. That's a tough one. Hey there, Rich. What's up, my man?
Hi. I was tuning into your show just about 10 minutes ago, and I heard you talking about the Cubs. And I just had an interesting thought here. It might help buffer just whatever the outcome for the Cubs is. It occurred to me about 10 years ago, that it's in a way it's cooler if the Cubs, now brace yourself that I'm saying this, that the Cubs never win a World Series.
Are you sure it was 10 years ago and not 13?
Did you just say that it'd be cooler too? Is that what you said?
And hear me out here. Just understand where I'm coming from. Don't get me wrong. It'd be very cool if the Cubs won. But the thing is, a lot of times, and it's happened with other teams in this city, when they win the brass ring, they fall off the cliff pretty fast after that. Maybe it takes 2 or 3 years, but once the championship is won, they did it, and they fall into mediocrity again, little by little. Hawks, no. It hasn't happened with the Hawks, and Bulls,
you know,
no.
The only thing that you're talking about is the Bears. Because the Bulls won 6 titles.
No, absolutely, absolutely. But
I mean, I guess you'd say the White Sox, too.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is there is something. The whole world embraces the drama that the Cubs go through, and it's because they get so close and they lose it. And there's something that captures the imagination of the world with that, and there's an excitement to that that only happens because they haven't won. And in a way, it's a bittersweet thing when they get so close, agreed, and I've been there too, the sadness, but I've learned to just embrace, you know, the Bartman thing, and every time, you know, the Steve Garvey catch, and, you know, all that stuff. It's all part of the bittersweet drama that us as baseball fans in Chicago have. And if they win it, great. If they don't and they get close, that's still great.
You know, Rich is a smart, smart guy. And I think what he's talking about, though, is what a lot of us experience in life. You always hear that life's not fair, that, you know, make lemons into lemonade, that kind of stuff. The Cubs are sort of an embodiment of that, trying to succeed and just not making it, but trying your damnedest.
Hey, Rich, are you afraid of success? I'm wondering.
No. Not at all. But I've just learned how to go with the momentum of what is.
Right.
And, you know, I've seen so many people just get so bent out of shape. I was loving last season.
Wait, hold on a second.
Especially that last game. They played great in that last game last year. And they were a young team, and yeah, they fought tooth and nail, and it was, and I was just, that last game, I was just soaking up every second of it, and it didn't matter to me if they won. It was so cool that they got that far, and
Rich, let me give you a hypothetical. You go to a restaurant, right?
Yep.
You order a cheeseburger. They bring you a chicken sandwich. Are you eating the chicken sandwich, or are you sending back, say, hey, I ordered a cheeseburger. Send me the cheeseburger.
Now, if I ordered a cheeseburger, I kind of want, especially if I'm having.
Now, Rich, can I give you a second hypothetical? Say you found out that the cook tried his hardest to make you that cheeseburger, but so many things that just seemed completely impossible stood in his way, and he still got you that chicken sandwich, and man, it's a pretty good chicken sandwich, but that's the best he could do given all the crazy stuff that happened. Would you eat the chicken sandwich then?
Well, in a way, interesting question, but I have more control over getting my chicken sandwich than a fan has seeing their team win or lose.
Yeah, you do. But I'm wondering if you just will.
You just have to go with the momentum. You don't really have much to do with what they're doing on the field. You can cheer them, and you can maybe give them your karma. But, you know, half of the – they're going to make the same amount of money basically either way, whether they win or lose. Yeah, they make more if they win a World Series. But their job is getting on the field and doing the best they can.
The waiter was five steps away from you with the cheeseburger, and everything just went crazy.
Wait, say again? Sorry.
I'm just continuing to tease Carm. Sorry.
No, I know, but just I know it's a weird thought, and I'm a huge Cub fan, and I go way back with this, and I've seen them many times – you know, get close and the heartbreak of it all, but it's exciting no matter what. It's even exciting now, and it's just interesting how us as fans, the media, this whole summer, there's been this, like, quiet lull.
That's
nobody wants to really talk about it like they probably do in other cities when there's been a lot more championships more frequently, and I love that. I mean, there's just this interesting atmosphere going on in the city this year, and there's this quiet hush that this is the year that the Cubs, you know, this is a pretty cool team.
Yep. All right, Rich, I gotta cut you off there because I think you might go until the Steve Cochran show. I love you, though. So, but you're hitting on something that I've been trying to touch into. There's this, like, what you just said, quiet lull. Like, I don't feel like the city going crazy about this. I don't feel like I don't, and I know they went to the playoffs last year, and we're all waiting for the moment, and when it finally pops and they're in the playoffs, it's going to feel different. But this has been just kind of a slow build. 6-3-0 texting game. I'm a Cards fan. I would trade a Cubs World Series win for a Trump loss. No more curses. Let me read that again. I'm a Cards fan. You let the Cubs win the World Series so Donald would lose. Well, that's big of you. It's putting your presidential candidate where your mouth is. And it's easier for the Cards, too. Because you guys win. But a lot of Cardinals fans, I don't know if they'd be with you on that one. They really want the Cubs' identity to stay the same. You guys are losers. We're the Cardinals. That would be a sweet part about winning. Last year beating the Cardinals in the playoffs, that was really, really nice. All right, final timeout, 720 WGN.
A new study finds that credit card agreements are literally too hard for most Americans to read. Find out what's being done about it when consumer reporter Herb Weisbaum joins me at 2:15 a.m. Dick DiGilio, overnights, 720 WGN.
Have you outgrown your timeshare? You bought it back when the kids were young, used it quite a bit then, formed some great memories. Well, now the kids have left the nest. They've got families of their own. You're not spending your vacations at the timeshare anymore. You're spending time traveling to see the grandkids and doing other things. Unfortunately, they're not using your timeshare, but yet you're still paying for it. You tried to sell it, didn't work. You thought about donating it, but you didn't want to do that to a charity you care about because then they'd be on the hook. Now you feel stuck. Well, you're not stuck. Timeshare Exit Team will get you out of your timeshare. Timeshare Exit Team is a consumer protection company, the most trusted name in the industry. They negotiate with resorts, and they get them to take the contract back. Go to TimeshareExitTeam.com, see the reviews, then schedule your free in-person consultation. Timeshare Exit Team has a 100% guarantee. They're going to get you out, or they'll give you a complete refund, because they're not going to get paid unless you both get what you want. Timeshare Exit Team. TimeshareExitTeam.com.
Do you suffer with chronic sinus infections? Symptoms may include facial pain, pressure above your eyes, below your eyes, sinus headaches. You might feel tired all the time. If this is you, you may also have heard of the Smart Sinus procedure, available only at Smart Sinus. It's a minimally invasive procedure done in the office to rid you of your chronic sinus infections. Imagine no more pressure, no more pain, no more chronic sinus infections. How? The Smart Sinus procedure. The most frequently heard comment from patients who've had the Smart Sinus procedure is they wish they had had it sooner. You don't have to live with the chronic sinus infections, the pressure, or the pain. Set an appointment with Smart Sinus and find out if the Smart Sinus procedure is right for you. Call 847-213-9797. 847-213-9797. That's 847-213-9797. 9797.
Experts are saying there's no doubt. Joe Rizza Acura is the favorite to win in 2016. Choose from our entire selection of over 150 vehicles. There's something here for everyone. You'll be running away with savings when you drive home in a new 2017 Acura RDX for just $399 a month. When you punch your ballot, you know who to pick. Joe Rizza Acura. Visit us in Orland Park, located on 159th Street, or head to RizzaAcura.com. 36-month lease, $29.99 due at signing, includes down payment, no security deposit. Excludes taxes, title, and fees for well qualified leasee. See dealer for details.
Hey, Chicago, what do you say?
Cubs baseball.
Hey, it's Kerry Wood. I talk playoff baseball with Roe Khan every Thursday afternoon at 4:40.
It's in our DNA.
Catch it all on WGN.
Go Cubs.
On 720 WGN.
That's right. It's in our DNA, baby. Here's another question. Let's just say hypothetically, like today they had the lottery for the division series and some people had the right to buy four tickets. They can buy them tomorrow. I'm going to be fortunate enough to have seats to, I think, one World Series game, one seat in the NLCS, one in the DS. Am I keeping those tickets or am I selling them? Did you just say selling him without a...
I absolutely did, without even a hesitation.
Esmeralda, bot, go or sell?
Well, you're a fan, though, so I would say go. Yeah, that's quite an experience and a memory.
Where are the seats going to be?
Really good seats.
And how much do you think you could get?
A lot of dough.
Yeah, but then you're going to be the bum that was like, oh, yeah, I could have been there for the playoff, but I sold them instead.
A bum that bought a car with the money he made off of selling tickets.
And they go to the series. We probably shouldn't be talking about this on the radio. They go to the series, you know, I could take less shifts if that happened. I mean, not that I would do that. I love being here.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't have gotten to see them live in your face.
Yeah, not live in my face, but live on TV with
right.
A beer that I could afford.
Yeah, that's cool.
Even if
but
I
you
was...
had tickets to see them? To see this experience?
It would hurt. There's another variable there, too. Like, I think that, you know, people that I am in on these seats, they don't want to sell them. So I would be like, I might be losing friends to do it. There's that animal. There's that part of it, too. I don't have a lot of time here to
How much money are we talking about? No, I'm kidding. Don't lose friends. Go to the game.
It's not a bad. I know. Let's have that conversation.
Wouldn't they just go without you?
I mean, what's that? Wouldn't they just go without me?
Right.
Not if I pilfer the tickets.
Yeah, not if he sells them all.
Not if I'm.
Oh, you would sell them all?
No, yeah. You got to sell more than
you can't
sell one.
What kind of
person are you? How do you sell just one?
I'm sorry. I would seriously wonder about your loyalty to people.
So no, wait,
and
though,
just in general.
If you did sell them without the other people agreeing, would you at least split the money with them, or would you also keep all the money?
I'd probably like get them a ticket in the upper deck glass corner. Here you go. Are we still friends? I hope we are.
You know, that's not a terrible idea. They get to experience all the experiences.
I'll pay for it.
Yeah.
You're just in the upper corner.
You're in the nosebleeds.
What's in too bad?
Right.
You should still love me. 312-981-7200. I know I don't have a lot of time, but I'm kind of curious what the people think about that one. I probably just going to go if they make it. I don't get ahead of ourselves here. But this, honestly, this has been keeping me up at night a little bit.
If you really think they're going to three-peat, what's so bad about going next year?
Yeah, but the first is always the best.
I know it is. That's why you're going to get the most money. And then you go and see them win next year, and that's the same thing. See them win a World Series, camaraderie, friendship.
Yeah,
that's some low-down dirty stuff if you were to sell them.
I wonder what people are going to do. This is going to be a steep ticket. Steep. But it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
Would it matter what game it is? It does. You just looked at me like I'm crazy.
I don't blame them if they unfriend you.
It wouldn't.
Completely.
It wouldn't. I mean, listen.
If
it's a series clinching game,
yeah.
In the World Series,
correct.
At home,
right.
It's a whole lot of dough. But even game one, it's the like if they make it to the World Series, it would be game three because the American League has home field. But game three of the World Series. The first World Series game in Chicago since on the North Side since 1945.
Not even a sports person, and I wouldn't sell them.
A lot of money in the ballpark that night.
Esmeralda, you'd go?
Yeah.
No matter how much money you got
that
offered.
That would be, I probably
crazy?
Wouldn't go because the pandemonium would be insane, but the experience alone would be pretty cool.
Esmeralda, you can go to this. Here's it. You can go to Game 3 of the World Series at home, or here's $1,000. Which one are you taking?
I'd probably go to the series.
It's
just me, though.
Yeah,
that's
you get
the
a grand.
Thing. The thing is, there's all these people attached to these tickets.
No, I'm.
If it was just me, then I'd be like, okay, yeah.
I'm saying,
but you have these friends that are also attached to the tickets, so you can't put up that hypothetical like that.
Yes, I can. That's my own hypothetical.
Then yeah, I would sell it because I'm not that into it.
Right.
But if there is other people attached and they're into it, I'd be like, okay, let's not sell them. Let's go.
Okay. So okay, you're just a good person. You're a good Esmeralda.
I like having friends.
Yeah,
Mark.
Yeah. You know.
I don't have a stuffed duck at home.
Alone and on my own. It's where I'm comfortable. You know, I'll have conversations with myself. I'll call up Vic Vaughn. He won't call me back. It's all right. What's up, Vic? Sorry.
Hey, Mark. Welcome.
Thank you. I know I got to go, and I just saw you pop into the chair.
Yeah, I can't hear.
Yeah, it's okay.
There we go.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, Vic, here's a grand or here's one ticket to Game 3 of the World Series. What are you taking?
What's the a grand or game three? Where's the at home?
Yep, you get to go to Wrigley for game three, or you can have $1,000. What are you doing?
I'll make $1,000 next week. I'm going to the game.
Whoa.
Me personally.
Vic!
What would you do? You'd sell it?
I'd be real tempted.